This is WBUR's All Things Considered. I'm Lisa Mullins. In late August 1918, thousands of American sailors were housed at the Commonwealth Pier in Boston's Seaport District. They were waiting to be shipped out to fight in Europe in World War I. A couple of sailors showed up at sickbay one day with fevers and other symptoms. By the end of that week, about 100 more were falling sick every day. This was the second wave of the so-called Spanish flu, and it hit Boston first. Kenneth C. Davis is a historian and prolific author. He wrote a history of the flu epidemic that tore through America 100 years ago. It's called More Deadly Than War. Set the scene for us, Kenneth. The first wave had done great damage, but the second wave was even more rampant and even more lethal. What was happening here in Boston at the time? This is the end of the summer of 1918.
Well, first of all, we have to set the scene by saying the emphasis on the war. In September 1918, America was at war. It took nearly a year for the United States to get ready to send troops, and they had gone off in the spring of 1918 at the very time that what became known as the Spanish flu started to take off. It had slacked off, flu season was over, but then started to make a comeback in late August and early September and hit Boston with a vengeance. And Boston was a major military port and a nearby military encampment.
So that's how it became ground zero for the second wave. And not only did it hit Commonwealth Pier, a building, by the way, which we should say is still standing, but it hit the hospital at Fort Devens out in central Massachusetts, a hospital that was built for 2,000 patients, was packed with 8,000. It was so bad out there, the U.S. Surgeon General sent some of the highest-ranking men in medicine to the base. What did they see there?
These were four of the most experienced doctors in epidemics in the world at the time. What they saw there frightened them. They saw bodies being stacked like cordwood, as one of them reported. So many young, healthy young men were dying so quickly they couldn't believe their eyes. And their death was gruesome. They were coughing, racked by pain, high fevers. Some of them were bleeding from their eyes, nose, mouth, and ears. And some of them were turning blue because they weren't getting enough oxygen. In fact, before this was called Spanish flu, it was called the Purple Death. That's a term for what we now would call cyanosis. You turn blue because you're not getting enough oxygen in your lungs. And that's what was killing these otherwise healthy young men.
How did it spread elsewhere in New England?
Well, the sailors who brought it into Boston not only spread it throughout Boston and then to the rest of New England, they also got on ships and spread it to the rest of America in many ways. They went to Philadelphia. They spread it through Philadelphia, which became probably the worst hit city in America. Boston was not far behind. They went to New Orleans, so it hit Louisiana. They sailed to San Francisco, so it hit there. They went to the Great Lakes Naval Station outside of Chicago, the largest naval base in the world at the time. Then people got onto trains and took it around the rest of the country.
So the war was kind of like the propulsion, because wherever the soldiers went and the sailors, that's where the flu went.
Absolutely. You cannot understand the history of the Spanish flu without understanding World War I, and you can't really understand what went on in the last year of World War I without understanding the flu.
Medical authorities, you write, were so desperate to find a cure that they conducted tests on volunteers who were in the brig at a military prison on Deer Island in Boston Harbor, and they promised to pardon those who were part of the experiments, who volunteered for the experiments. How many takers did they have?
They had 60, I think it was 60, around 60 men agreed to do this. They were going to be set free for a variety of offenses. And what was curious is that none of them, although they were swabbed and injected with live virus and goo and phlegm from sufferers, any way that you think of to get these guys to contract the virus, none of them did. And it's one of several mysteries about the Spanish flu, why those men in the brig in Boston didn't get sick. I should say also at the time, they didn't know what a virus was. It would be another nearly 20 years before viruses would actually be seen and understood. So these doctors were fighting in the dark.
There's so much about this story that sounds very familiar. Lots of places closed down. We know that the Red Sox did manage to play the World Series and win, thanks to Babe Ruth, in part. Churches had to close, and that was very controversial back then. What are the lessons that we can take from what happened 100 years ago?
Lisa, I think there are three central lessons. One of the real important points of this is that lies and censorship and propaganda even were very critical in the spread of the disease. It was believed, for instance, that the Germans might have started this, that they had given us poisoned water, or that Bayer, a German company, had tainted aspirin, its wonder drug. The next point is very important, ignoring science. There were clearly scientists, doctors, medical people who were advocating a much more aggressive response to this, and certainly avoiding large crowds. Those were ignored, partly because of the war again. People wanted to have big Liberty Loan marches. The Liberty Loans were war bonds. The fourth Liberty Loan drive began in September of 1918, right in the middle of the outburst. Boston had a parade. Philadelphia had an infamous parade where 200,000 people were in the street, and 2 days later, every hospital bed was filled. So ignoring science is really lethal. And finally, misplaced priorities. In 1918, the priority was winning the war. So troops kept being shipped off, even though doctors said, don't pack these soldiers onto troop ships. So we take those lessons and we look at it today. What do we learn? Boston tried to shut down. It was too late. Other cities were much more careful about social distancing, and they did flatten the curve, a modern term. But it's a very important lesson to learn that if we go too soon towards relaxing those measures, it can be very, very costly. It certainly was in 1918.
Thank you very much for telling us about it. Historian Kenneth C. Davis, the author of More Deadly Than War, about the 1918 flu epidemic in America. The author, by the way, of several other books as well. Kenneth Davis, thank you.
Thank you for having me.